Okay, it's my pleasure right now to have on the line, live from Dallas, Texas, the president of Jam Creative Productions, Jonathan Wolfert. Hi, Jonathan. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Doing real good, real good. I really appreciate you taking the time to consent to this interview. I know a lot of people that are into jingles and have a mild or somewhat avid interest in jingles will be very interested in what you have to say.
Well, I'm one of those people myself, so I can understand that, and I hope that whoever's listening to this, wherever they may be, gets something interesting out of it.
Okay, John, you're different from probably a lot of people that run certain companies. You're a real jingle freak, right?
Yeah, that's true, and I've been interested in jingles as long as I can remember. It was a hobby of mine back in junior high school and high school to collect jingles. At first just by taping them off the air, which was kind of crude, but later on when I started to make friends who worked at radio stations and found out more about the business, I started to get better copies for my collection, and before I knew it, I discovered there were other people doing the same kind of thing as a hobby, and we started trading tapes all across the country, and in the late 60s and early 70s had quite an amazing little network actually put together of people who traded tapes back and forth. And I often wonder whether such networks exist amongst friends today, because we had it, we had tapes zipping back and forth. There were probably half a dozen or a dozen of us who were really into it, and we corresponded with each other via tape, traded jingles back and forth, and air checks and other radio-related things, and it was a lot of fun.
How long have you been with Jam Productions? Actually, what does the Jam and Jam Productions stand for? I know it stands for something besides a music jam.
Yeah, well, Jam, the initials J-A-M, are short for John and Mary Lynn. I'm John, Mary Lynn is my wife, and the two of us started the company in 1974. So I guess the answer is we've been with Jam as long as there's been a Jam, and that's been about 11 and a half years now.
Okay, now before Jam, you were with another jingle company, weren't you?
Yeah, I originally came to Dallas from New York. I'm from New York, and I moved down here to work at Tams, and I did that for about 3.5 years, and then there was a brief period where I worked at some of the other places here in town before we started Jam.
Okay, tell me a little bit about Tams. Anybody that really knows a lot about jingles or air checks or old radio, Pam's put out some of the best-sounding jingles that have ever been put out, you know, until Jam burst on the scene, of course. What happened to that company?
Well, let me say first that Pam's was in its heyday, which I would probably point to as the mid to late 60s. They were an excellent production company, and I loved their stuff. Thought they did the best work of anybody around, and it was my big ambition in life to get to work there, and I was very fortunate because I was able to accomplish that. And the thing that happened when I was there, I guess I got in right at the end of the good days, and or maybe it was just that I was on cloud nine to such an extent when I got there that I was oblivious to some of the shortcomings. But basically, it's a long story, but I can sum it up by saying that they started to believe that jingles were on the way out, and the company started frantically looking for other areas to expand into. So they started to try and produce programming for radio stations, for automated stations. They started to try and manufacture the equipment, the automation equipment that would go with that, and just got into a lot of other things which were outside the area of expertise, and it started draining a lot of money out of the company, and it was just a mess. And sooner or later, paychecks started bouncing or not being there, and the morale went down. The next thing that happens is the product goes down, and then what happens is your business goes down. It's a spiral, and you've probably seen the same thing happen with great radio stations that are marvelous for years, and then all of a sudden they just really deteriorate because of some little intangible thing that goes wrong. So basically that's what happened, and they got more and more in debt, and the quality of the product started to go down, and eventually, it took several years to get to this stage, but eventually the IRS, I think, foreclosed on their assets and auctioned them off and so forth. So that there is an outfit today that uses the name Pam's. It's Ben Friedman's company, CPMG, in Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
And they are some of the people who bought these PAMS tracks and so forth that were auctioned off, but the thing about them is that they are really not the same people that the original PAMS was. It's just somebody else now using that name.
Yeah, I've heard the jingles. They sound like the good old PAMS jingles of old until the people actually start singing, and then it's completely different.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, they have some of the music tracks, and that's fine, and the thing is that the people that made those great old jingles and really knew how to do them are not part of the process anymore, and that's the difference you're hearing.
Was this about the time that everybody decided that jingles, well, if you had one jingle on the air, the old TM shotgun jingle, that's really all you needed? It seemed like every top 40 radio station in every market had just the one jingle.
Yeah, I sure hated that era. There were actually two eras in radio that I really disliked personally. The first was when everybody decided you had to have these Drake acapellas, which were done by the Johnny Mann Singers. And they figured all you needed was an acapella just like KHJ, and every station started to imitate that, and all you heard were acapellas. That was pretty boring. And then a few years later, like you said, the shotgun came about, and everybody decided they needed to sound just like KCBQ, and they bought this one shotgun cut, which got to be pretty tiresome, too, especially since all the other companies had to come up with imitations of it. So no matter where you turned, all you heard was a little drum thing and maybe one brass note and the call letters. I'm really glad to see that these days people are being a little more creative with the jingles that they're using on the air.
Okay, Jam Productions put out a lot of great jingles over the years. How many packages for radio stations would you estimate you've done up till early 1986?
Oh, I would be guessing, I think probably around 100 different packages as far as syndicated series that are available. As far as the actual number of stations, that's in the thousands somewhere, because when we do a series and it's available in syndication, then any number of stations can buy it in different markets, obviously. So we might have a package that's on 100 or 200 different stations, and then another package that's on 20 or 30. So I really don't have an accurate number, but the last time that we had to put that information together, we calculated that in our history we had done somewhere on the order of 2,000 different stations at one time or another.
Okay, that brings me to my next question. Say I come to you and I say, John, I like your jingles, but I really want something different and unique for my radio station, WXTC in Charleston, and I want you to do a complete custom package for me. How would I go about contacting you for that besides calling you up? How would we go about arranging to do that, and what would the creative process be from that point? Because a lot of stations do that. They go to you and say, I want my own brand new package. I don't want to have the same melody and the same singers and instruments that I hear exactly on WLS. I want something completely different.
In your first call, you would basically tell us a little bit about what it is you want, if you know. Now, we get clients who come to us with differing degrees of input. Some of them know exactly what they want, and they say, here's the lyrics, here's what I want each cut to sound like, make it. And other people come to us and say, hey, we're looking for an idea, do you have one? And of course, every place in between. So we would ask you questions to try and get from you what you're looking for, what your objective is, what type of jingles you want. There's lots of variation in what's available. There are short cuts, there are long cuts, there are packages that sound sort of like the music that's being played. There are packages that deliberately try to sound not like the music. So we would ask you all those questions to find out what your particular likes and dislikes are. And basically, we would then try to construct a list of what the different cuts in the package are that you would need. For example, do you want a jock cut? Do you want a legal ID? Do you want transition cuts? Do you just want tempo basics? Do you want a song? Do you need a news intro? There's a whole list. And from that information, we would then get some idea of the type and the scope of package that you're interested in, and we would be able to give you some kind of price estimate. That's the thing. A custom package is by its very nature a little more expensive to do because you're not only bringing in singers, you're bringing in musicians and arrangers and also taking a lot more production time.
Are all the custom packages later syndicated?
Almost always. Pretty much, I can't even think of an exception. Custom packages are syndicated by us in other markets, and that's what helps keep the price for the initial custom as low as it can be. Oftentimes, we don't make any money. Sometimes we even wind up putting in some of our own money in the making of a custom because it's an investment for us. If we know we have a real hot package that's going to sell 86 times, then we will make some money when we syndicate it. But even so, we still need to charge a little bit more for the custom just because it's more expensive to do and it takes longer and so forth. So that's the reason that most of the custom packages you hear are piloted for stations in major markets like New York or LA or Chicago, because a lot of times they'll have the budget to do something like that. But that doesn't mean that we don't want to talk to you in Charleston, South Carolina about doing a custom, because it may be that you need five or six custom cuts that you can afford, and you may not need a 600 cut jingle package or something. So to get back to how it's done, after we establish all that and agree on what we want to do, almost in every case I get involved personally, especially on a custom, and I would talk to you about the various sounds, the instrumentation. I might ask you what jingles you've heard in the past that you really like and which ones you dislike. The same thing for records. Are there certain groups or certain vocalists that you like or dislike that we should know about? And mainly just by asking a lot of these questions, we kind of zero in on what you want, and then we just do it. I know that sounds kind of simple, but that's sort of how it is. It's kind of like asking a disc jockey, well, how do you do that? You just kind of turn on the mic and stuff comes out of your mouth. Well, to a disc jockey, that's kind of second nature. And that's sort of what I'm saying here. After we get enough information, we just know what to do, and we do it.
Okay, how do you make jingles? Custom and syndicated. What's the process like?
Well, the first thing, let's start with a custom, because that's really where everything does begin. Obviously, we would get the input like I just described, and we would then write the cuts. We have a number of different writers that we use for different projects. I do some of the writing myself, and it depends on the project. I might do it all, or I might do none of it. It just really depends what sort of instrumentation is required and how many cuts and so forth. So I would basically communicate to the other writers what the sound is, what the idea is, and what each of their cuts is supposed to accomplish. And that takes place usually about a week before the recording session. Then on the fateful day, we go in the studio, and the first thing we lay down is the rhythm track. So you have a drummer, bass player, keyboard, a guitar, sometimes two guitars. If it's a country package, maybe you have a steel player. And you lay down the basic rhythm tracks to the package. Then another day, let's say the next day, you would add brass or strings if the package called for that. And basically, it's the same process that's used in recording hit records these days. They come in, they put on headphones, and they hear what the people who came before them have recorded. In other words, the string players come in, and they would hear the rhythm track in their headphones, and they would add their part. And we'd be recording this whole thing on a 24-track tape so that we have control over each instrument and each section later on. They're all on separate tracks. So after we do the brass and the strings, maybe we put on some percussion or synthesizer, whatever's called for. Usually the last thing we put on is the vocals. And the singers will come in using pretty much the same technique. They have headphones, and they hear the music track plan, and they sing their parts. After everything's recorded, we mix the jingles, which is to say we take all of those different elements on those 24 tracks and combine them in a pleasing way. You have to determine how loud each of the individual instruments should be. You have control over whether you want echo or whether you want to equalize it so that it sounds brighter or bassier. If you're mixing in stereo, which almost everything is these days, you have to decide what you want on the left and what you want on the right. And that's the mixing process, which in a custom package takes a long time. It always amazes clients who are here, because a little jingle that's 6 seconds long takes about an hour and a half to mix the first time, because we spend a lot of time making it wonderful. And basically, then the client has his package mixed on a mono or a stereo tape, and we edit it and pretty it up, send it on its way, and it flies through the air into your radio. Then a few weeks later, we will make a demonstration tape or a demo tape showing those jingles that we just made for client X, and we'll send those out to interested stations in other markets. And if they say, yeah, that's exactly what I want, I like those, then all we have to do is work on changing the lyrics, because obviously Hot Rockin' Z100 is not going to do you any good if your call letters are Kiss FM. So we will reword the lyrics, and sometimes the stations do that on their own, and sometimes they ask us for help either way. And in the case of a syndicated package, then, the tracks already exist, because we've already recorded them, so all we do is we bring back the same exact singers, and they just sing it over again with the new words. And sometimes we change the melody a little bit. The station's logo usually changes from station to station, which is good. Makes it a little more individualized, I think. And then we repeat the mixing process, and off they go. And that's basically what we do 90% of the time.
Okay, what kind of money are we talking about? How much do these radio stations in New York pay, and how much do the stations in Twin Falls, Idaho, and the smaller markets pay? I'm sure it's not the same thing.
Well, no, there's really quite a range. A custom package, usually just based on the typical number of cuts that stations like to have, a custom package usually will cost somewhere between $10,000 and $15,000, although we have done them for as much as $30,000. That's unusual, but we've done it. Now, when that same package is available for syndication, we usually price it on a per-cut basis, and the per-cut price varies on the market size somewhat. I would say the low end is probably $225 a cut. The high end is maybe $500 a cut, just depending on where you are. It also is influenced by how many cuts you're buying, whether you're buying the entire package or not. And obviously, if the package consists of a lot of real long cuts, then they're more expensive because they take longer. And if they're real quick, then they might be a little less. But these are all generalities I'm giving you, but it should give you some ballpark ideas.
Jonathan, tell me about your jingle singers. Jingle singers have always fascinated me. I got a chance to see a videotape of the singers in action, and it was kind of strange after hearing those voices all those years to actually see them do their thing. Tell me about some of the singers that are regulars with you.
Well, they vary. They range in age from young 20s all the way to people in their 50s who have been doing this for 20 or 30 years. And it amazes me personally to be friends with and actually to be employing some of the singers who sang on jingles that I used to hear when I was growing up collecting the stuff. and for those people to still be doing it and still sounding great and be doing it here is kind of an interesting turnaround. I think the one thing that they all have in common is that they are very skilled musicians. And you have to be that if you want to be in that business, in this business, because you have to have the ability to come into the studio, look at the music that's put in front of you, which you've never seen before. You don't have a chance to really practice it or take it home overnight and learn it. You just, there it is in front of you. If you've never seen it before, sing it. You have to be able to read the music, and you have to be able to sing your part. And especially when we're doing seven voice vocal work, the harmony parts are very complex, and they really don't make a lot of sense by themselves. If you were to hear what the singer in the middle of the seven voice group is singing, you would think that she's singing Chinese or something, but they have to be able to do that. They have to enunciate clearly and without an accent. They have to blend. In other words, they have to know how loud to sing in relation to the other people in the group. And they have to enunciate everything the same and cut off all the letters exactly. And it's real difficult. It's real demanding. And it's probably more difficult than doing a vocal on a record session or a backup type of thing on a commercial where things are a little looser. When you have a jingle that's 5 or 6 seconds long, there's no room for error. Everything has to be precise, and these people do that. Some of the people that are worth mentioning, well, they're all worth mentioning, but our bass singer on our big group stuff is Jim Clancy. A lot of people know him because he's got such a deep, wonderful, resonant voice when he sings that you can usually tell immediately whether he's on a jingle package or not. And I know a lot of clients who have come down to Jam have met Jim and like him. He is, as I said, the bass singer, and he's been doing this for quite a number of years. He started in the late 50s, believe it or not, singing jingles part-time for Pam's, I guess when he was still in college. And he's doing it today, and a little-known fact about him is that he is, in his spare time, the director of a vocal chorus called the Vocal Majority, which is a barbershop chorus. It's got about 120 guys in it, and four times now they've won the international championship competition under his direction, which is kind of neat. So he's definitely into music and so forth. And I could tell you stories like that about every one of them. There's a lot of people are surprised that there are a relatively small number of singers that are responsible for most of the things that they hear on the radio. That's certainly true. I would say there's probably 12 or 15 singers who, in different combinations, do just about everything that you hear come out of Dallas. And the same thing is true in New York, and the same thing is true in L.A. as far as doing the commercials that you hear for national sponsors and stuff. It's a really small, specialized business.
So I would assume good jingle singers are hard to find.
Yeah, they really are. You need a very unique quality to your voice, and all of those things that I mentioned a little while ago about being able to read and blend and so forth. You know, program directors are always getting air checks from people that want to be jocks on their stations, and you can probably relate to how laughable some of them are. The same thing happens here, except instead of air checks from jocks, we get demo tapes from singers. People who want to be jingle singers and people who want to work here and so forth. And they send us tapes which range from real good to, you know, somebody with a cassette machine standing next to their piano trying to sing. And maybe one in 50 is even close enough to consider. It's real hard. People who maybe have been told by somebody, oh, you have a beautiful voice, you should get into doing jingles. Well, they may have a beautiful voice, but they have to know how to use it, and that comes with experience and doing a lot of listening and knowing. You know, it's like being a good jock. Just because you have a deep voice doesn't guarantee you're going to be a good jock.
Since you mentioned that some of the same singers, and I would assume musicians, work for all the different Dallas companies, what really do you think separates a Jam jingle, a Jam production? What makes it special and unique when possibly the very same people are doing the same thing across the street?
That's a good question. A lot of people think that the vocal group is an organized group and they move from place to place as a unit, and that's not what happens. Every singer with the exception of a couple that we have on staff who do other things here as well. But for the most part, every singer is a freelancer. And every producer in town, whether they're doing station IDs or commercials or anything else, that each producer decides who they want to have in their group. We have put together what we think is the best combination of singers for each package we do, and the folks across town may use half of those people and three or four others that we wouldn't use. I think the thing that makes us different is, first, the people we have selected and the way we have picked the singers to sing each part in the group. I just think our group is better, basically, is what I'm saying. And also, I think the production is better here than anywhere else. And by that, I mean that the vocal producer is very critical. He won't take a jingle. In other words, he won't say, okay, we've got it, let's do the next one, until everything about it is as good as it can be. It has to be in tune and together and understandable, and we check that stuff, I think, a lot more than some of the other places. Basically, the guiding philosophy is quite simple. It's I never want to be in a city somewhere and turn on the radio to hear our jingles come out and not like what I hear. And I'm real picky, and I've tried to implant that in all the other people that are working here, and I think, as far as I can tell, we have. So it's a question that's not only of who you use, but what you do with them. And I think we are better at both of those things.
What's your favorite jingle package of all time, excluding the jam packages?
That is a toughie, and it depends a lot on what mood I'm in. I would say if I'm in a nostalgic mood or a real rock and roll mood, I think some of the PAMS packages from the mid-60s are great to listen to. The old Series 27 Jet Set and all the PAMS series, actually, between 27 and 33 or 34 are great listening. That includes Fun Vibrations and Music Power and Go-Go and all those great things from the 60s. And then on a completely different mood, I really like a lot of the stuff that was done by Hugh Heller in the very early 70s. It was all written by a fellow named Dick Hamilton, who lives in Los Angeles. And he was very much into using synthesizers back before that became commonplace. And they did some beautiful synthesizer work and some beautiful vocals out there in Los Angeles for stations like WIBC and KFI and WLW. A lot of those kind of stations in the early 70s had some great jingles from L.A. And so, personally, excluding our own material, I'd say those two things compete for my favorite award.
Okay, what's your favorite jam package that you've ever done?
Well, I've been asked that question before, and I've thought it over, and I've decided I really can't pick out any one, because whatever's new, whatever we're working on at the moment, I get excited about, because all of my energies and creative juices are into it, and I really like it. And then we go and do something new, and then I get excited about that one. So that's not to say that the preceding one is less good. It's just real hard for me to pick anything in particular. I mean, like everybody else, there are certain cuts in each package that I like more than others. And if I ever was programming a station and had to pick jingles, it would be like a kid in a candy store, because there's so many here that I like. But I don't know that I have any one favorite package.
Okay, what's been your most successful package?
Up until about 1982, I would have told you the answer to that question is Priority One. Priority One is one of the first packages we ever did. It came out in 1975, and it was just a real exciting, short shotgun type of a package with a lot of electronics and so forth. And that is on close to 200 radio stations, or at least it was at that time. In the past two or three years, though, we've had some great successes with packages like the Flamethrower, which was done for Z-100 in New York, and Warp Factor, which was the follow-up package for Z-100. And, of course, probably even more successful with the packages we've done for KISS in Los Angeles. I think Hot KISS and Fresh KISS have been real successful. So of the recent vintage, I think we've done more of those series than anything else.
So I would assume that since CHR has been reborn here in the last two or three years and jingles have made a real comeback, that the jingle business is pretty good, huh?
Jingle business is great, and we are inundated, swamped with orders, which is a great problem to have. And the one point that I'd make, though, is that even back when everybody thought that jingles were not being used very much and people were cutting back on jingles, even then we were still busy. We've always been busy. So we are busier now, but it's not like we were sitting around playing cards for a couple of years and then all of a sudden we started to get busy. We've always been busy. So I've often been puzzled by certain folks who think that jingles were really dead for a while. They may have been at other places in town, but we've always had plenty to do.
So what other things are you involved in besides jingles? I know that you have a couple of other projects, right?
Well, yeah, a couple of things. We also, on occasion, will do commercial-type jingles for somebody's department store or shopping center or what have you. And our biggest national account in that regard is the U.S. Air Force. We do all of the radio spots for the Air Force, the public service spots and the paid spots, just trying to promote their various recruiting efforts and so forth. And we also do the audio portion of their TV spots that you sometimes see. So that's a pretty big deal, and that keeps us quite busy. And in addition to that, we also have a production library called The Answer, which is a service designed to help stations make their spots and promos and stuff better. And it's a wealth of production music and effects and commercials and so on that that we would sell exclusively to one station in the market. And that's pretty much most of what we do. I would say most of our time and effort goes into doing radio IDs. And then there's the occasional commercial and the ongoing production work for the Air Force, trying to keep our library updated and current. And we also do some work for some TV stations. I'd say our biggest single account in that area is Channel 13 in Baltimore, WJZ. We've been doing their music for 4 or 5 years in a row now, and they have a big campaign that they do every fall, which really rivals what the networks do in terms of being slick and well produced and so forth, and we do all the music for that. So that keeps us busy, and we are so busy and so swamped that we really need a second studio. We have one, but it's really not enough to keep up with the demand. So this year we will be constructing a new building, which will not only be a new home for the company, the offices and so on, but we'll have two 24-track recording studios, which we are looking forward to because it'll enable us to get stuff done a lot faster, and guys won't have to wait so long to get their jingles, and I know that will make them very happy.
Okay, what if I'm a poor disc jockey and working for a program director or a radio station manager who will not buy me my own jingle? And I can't really afford $250 to $500 for my own jingle, my own John Quincy jingle, for instance. Don't you all have a little deal worked out where the disc jockey can purchase those things direct from you at a substantially lower rate?
Well, we do our best to help these guys out. And the most inexpensive thing would be to get a shout of your name, which is basically the group doing John Quincy, that kind of thing. We which is handy to drop in over record intros or even over other jingles the station might have, and it's relatively inexpensive to do something like that, $50 or $75, depending on what you want, will get you that. The next step up from that might be if you wanted to do something with the Sonovox, which is that electronic voice type sound that we use a lot for CHR, and we can do something with that for, again, these prices I'm quoting are real ballpark. It always depends on the specifics of the situation, but for 100 or 125, something like that, we can do something in Sono. And if you want your name sung as an a cappella, that's maybe 150 or 175. So there's a lot of things short of getting an actual full-blown $250 jingle for yourself. And we try as best we can to help young, struggling, jingle-loving disc jockeys, because they oftentimes turn into slightly older but still struggling jingle-loving program directors. And we want them to like us when that day comes. Especially if they're not in a big rush, we sometimes tell them, well, we can do such and such for you at a pretty cheap price if you're willing to wait until we have some time in a session. And we can maybe do it at the end of a session and fill up some time where we'd otherwise have nothing particular to do. So there's all kinds of ways to get your jingle.
What are the hours of a jingle singer?
The hours of a jingle singer, most of them work in the morning from 9 to 1 and work in the afternoon from 2 to 6. And occasionally there'll be a night session from 7 to 9 or even 7 to 11. So it's conceivable that somebody could be singing jingles from 9 in the morning till 11 o'clock at night. We usually don't record in the morning. We have found we have our best success recording in the afternoon and in the evening. So almost every afternoon we have recording going on here. And the reason for that is quite simple. We found by experience that in a morning vocal session, you spend the first couple of hours trying to get everybody to wake up, and the next couple of hours they spend wondering what's for lunch. You never really have their undivided attention, whereas in the afternoon, they've been fed, and they've been warmed up by somebody else, and they're ready to get down and do it. So we have good sessions in the afternoon. And in the evening, like tonight, we had a session from 7 to 10. So there's a lot of work, and there's a lot of hours to put in, and it can get tiring, but the trick is to not let that creep into the performance.
Okay, whose jingles did you do tonight? Just curious.
This evening we did jingles for KRBE in Houston, and we had three clients up from Houston for that session. And after that we had a couple of DJ cuts to do for KCPX in Salt Lake City, two or three cuts for a Canadian station, and we did a couple of cuts for Radio 1, which is the BBC in England.
So that's pretty much a typical jingle session for you guys, right?
Yeah, it really is. There's usually in each session, there's one major package, somebody who's bought 10 or 15 or 20 cuts, and then the last hour or so we try to reserve for smaller orders that need to get done, like somebody who's just got a new jock and they need a jingle for him, or somebody's putting on a new show and they need one or two cuts. So it's usually a mixed bag like that.
How are the singers and the musicians paid, on a per cut basis, on a salary or per session, or how does that work?
For the most part, it's on an hourly basis. There are different scales established depending on what kind of work is being done. Commercials, for example, pay a little more than the station IDs do. But by the most part, it's an hourly rate, but there is a minimum call. So if you bring somebody in and just use them for 5 minutes, they're still going to get paid for a couple of hours, just to make it worth their time to come over and do it for you. But that's the basis of it.
Well, John, I certainly appreciate you taking the time to talk to me about jingles. You've answered a lot of questions that I've had for years. I, at one time, was a real jingle freak and still have a strong interest in it. I know a lot of people who'll be hearing this tape and reading the interviews that come from it will be equally enlightened and delighted to hear from you. So I certainly appreciate you doing this.
Well, I'm always happy to talk about jingles, and especially happy to remind people or to let them know, if they don't know about JAM, that we are into this and we're doing it because we like it, and it's not just a business to us. It's not just a sideline. It's corny, but it's our life, you know. And I think that that's what really sets our stuff apart from the others. We spend a lot of time and effort thinking about this and trying to keep up with what radio folks want and what they think sounds good and the music and so on. And any time that somebody has a question, or nobody should feel intimidated. Nobody should feel that, oh, well, I don't really know how to get jingles, so oh my goodness, because we work with people who have done it 100 times and we work with people who've never done it before, and we know how to take care of you. So anytime somebody has a question or anything about jingles, they should call us and talk to us, because that's why we're here.
So being a jingle freak yourself, I'm sure you can tolerate the jingle freaks that are still out there, right?
Absolutely, and there's nothing that's more fun than every now and then getting a letter from somebody who's maybe you know, in his teens, and he's collecting jingles, and it's taken, he summoned up all of his courage to write a letter to JAM, hoping that maybe we'll send him a tape. And I look at this letter, and it looks like something that I could have written 20 years ago. And I sympathize, and I know how that person feels, and we usually send them something. We don't always have time to drop everything and deal with it right then that second, but sooner or later we'll get around to taking care of everybody. So jingles are fun, and they should be.
Well, John, thank you very much for giving us 45 minutes or so of your time. I certainly appreciate it, and best of luck with JAM now and in the future.